Welcome into First Draft, the final First Draft. It's bittersweet to say I am Field Yates, and the 2024 NFL Draft is officially in the books. Thanks for joining us all season long. We can't wait to do all the draft grades, and by we, I actually mean this man right here, the man who is the NFL Draft, Mel Kiper Jr., 41 years of the ESPN on the draft, 46 in total. Mel, what'd you think of the 2024 NFL Draft?
I'll tell you, it's going to be a critical draft moving forward. A lot of surprises, not as many trades, but some shocking picks. Atlanta got it going, Michael Penix Jr. It was as scripted early, but some players that we thought would be drafted weren't. But teams that are really setting themselves up well for a good run, and some teams that are set up well for even next year based on some of the deals they made, and some that really aren't, that put it really all into this draft, one of which being in the NFC North. So it's going to be a lot of fun to review it, Field. We know now where the destinations are. We're not going to project it anymore and guess about it. Now we know who went where, and we can kind of get an idea now what we think these teams will look like moving forward into the training camp and into the regular season.
All those debates for the past few months, Mel, between you and I are now gone, as we can talk about where these players are as opposed to where we think they should go. We're going to do your draft grades, Mel. You just mentioned the NFC North. That's where we're going to start. We're going to kind of do our best to cover as much ground on each team, or at least a lot of them today. And let's begin in the NFC North, Mel. And a couple of teams that, let's give you the full grades, by the way, before we get into the specific teams. Bears, Lions, Packers, all tie for a B. Vikings go C+. Mel, I'm going to start with the Bears here and ask you this question. If the Bears had had more picks, do you expect they would have had a higher grade? Because of the fact that they got Caleb Williams and Rome Odunze, I loved this draft. If they had more volume, would they have been potentially an A-level grade?
Couple things, Field. I think the first two picks were gimmies. I mean, anybody could have made those picks. You could have been a hockey analyst and never watched an NFL game or whatever, you know, boxing analyst and never, and you would pick Caleb Williams and Rome Odunze. I mean, they were hand-delivered. I think when you look at the key picks are at fourth round, taking Torrey Taylor, punter from Iowa. We know he's got a great leg. We know he was a critical entity for Kirk Ferentz and the Iowa Hawkeyes. He can flip field position. That's a critical thing in the NFL. So I think when you look at Torrey Taylor, he's going to determine a lot. And Austin Booker, they went and got him. The point of emphasis, Field, for the Bears, I thought, and I had heard, was going to be pass rusher opposite Montez Sweat, right? And they had given up that second-round pick to get him, which was a great trade for the Chicago Bears. Austin Booker, who did nothing at Minnesota, comes to Kansas, newcomer of the year, has a good season. Draft process didn't treat him great. His stock had dropped. I thought he'd maybe go third round. He goes in the fifth. He's a critical entity. Somebody's got to give them opposite Montez Sweat some semblance of a pass rush. Is it going to be Booker? He, to me, will determine if it's a B grade is right, or it should have been a little lower, or that B grade is a little off, it should have been a little higher. So I think the two guys will determine that. As we know, we talk about a Yale offensive tackle. Kieran's a developmental tackle. They're set at tackle. He can learn, right? But the fourth and fifth round picks are going to determine the fate of this draft.
All right, so Mel, the one thing I will say is that while you said that Malik Nabers was a gimme, Rome Odunze was a gimme at number 9 overall, there were some people that would have said, hey, you know, the Bears should have prioritized that pass rusher, maybe even a Byron Murphy II because of the role he plays within that Matt Eberflus defense. I like them resisting temptation to go elsewhere on the board and just take the number 6 overall player on my board, I think even higher on your board, number 5 overall in Rome Odunze. Part of the reason why I thought that was the grand slam of night one. The Chicago Bears absolutely crushed it on night one, A+ for night one, at least in my estimation. The Vikings out at C+ here, Mel, the lowest grade in this division. What didn't you like about it?
Yeah, I look at the Vikings overall. When you think about where we are right now with this football team, I think they did some good things. They're not set up well for next year. You know, that's the main thing with three picks. But I think when you look at J.J. McCarthy, a little high for me. 15 on the board, they take him at 10. I love Dallas Turner where they got him. But after that, I think it all revolves around J.J. McCarthy. If he's as good as some think he can become, I get it. But they gave up a lot to get the players they were able to acquire. Walter Rouse will be a backup type. Jackson brings you size, but had some inconsistencies. Riker, the kicker, was my third highest rated kicker, not my first, okay? So you thought about Joshua Cardy from Stanford and then Cam Little from Arkansas, then Riker. So, yeah, again, not set up well for next year. McCarthy is the critical part of this. They have everything around the quarterback. There's no excuses here. Sam Darnold, hey, if you want to revive your career and you want to prove that you should have been the third pick overall not that long ago and you can become a quality starting quarterback or a solid starting quarterback, Sam Darnold has that opportunity, Field. He's got the bookend tackles. He's got the running game. He's got the receivers. He's got everything in place. And if he's not, then you turn it over to J.J. McCarthy, and what does he become? That's what it's all going to be about, Field. 3 years from now, where's J.J.? Where is this team? Is Dallas Turner a 12-sack-a-year guy, or is he a 7-sack? What is Dallas Turner? But we think he can be the guy. They've always had that pass rusher. They need him to get it done. I just didn't like the fact they gave up a lot. They don't have much for next year's draft whatsoever. So it boils down to that and McCarthy to determine that. And I thought McCarthy at 10 was a reach. We knew it was going to happen, Theo. We knew it. Yep. So it happened. 10 wasn't as bad as maybe 6, but still a reach in my opinion.
Yeah, Mel, the Vikings seem to be banking on a bunch of compensatory picks next year, because as of right now, the Vikings have three total picks in the 2025 NFL draft. A first and 2/5. How about that? All right, moving forward to the NFC East in just 1 second, Mel, but the Lions not getting a higher grade. They got a B after taking my guy, Giovanni Manu. Come on now, Mel. What's wrong with you? Plus, Levi Drake Rodriguez went to the Vikings.
All right. I'm looking at my sheet here, Field, and I see Terry and Arnold. Nice pick, right? And I see Ennis Rakestraw. That wasn't my guy. That was your guy. Yeah. I'm not as big on Rakestraw Jr. as you and Matt and everybody seems to be. Manu in the 4th round? Really, Field?
Yeah.
Really?
Really.
I mean, I know you like him. I know all that. I know you. Would you have taken him in the 4th round?
No,
and you're a big fan of his. I don't think so.
Yeah, Mel, any time on day 3 was fine for me because of this reason. There are players that are such balls of clay right now that the range is going to be so disparate, right? Like Jalen Hunt, your guy, who ended up going late in the 3rd round, which you told me was going to happen, by the way. You know stuff. There were teams that were lower on him. Say, hey, he's more of a 5th round guy. I just think these developmental players have a much wider range that if you're in a spot where you're weary of somebody else taking him, by the time you're next on the clock, you just do it. Plus, Mel, I can't be behind the guy all draft year and then not give him some love on draft day.
Yeah, you just overrated him a little bit. That's fine. Giovanni Manu in the 4th round. Get out of here.
And
as far as I like their late round, I did, instead of giving him a C or C plus field, the reason why they didn't get a C or C plus based on this draft so far is the later round picks. I really do like Sione Vaki. Sione Vaki, I think, is a running back.
Yeah,
now, if they play him at safety, I think he's going to be overmatched. So that's going to determine a lot, too. What do they do with Vaki, right?
Yep.
I really like the other picks. Makai Wingo. Yeah. He was more to me than Mason Smith. Mason Smith is a what can he be when he's healthy? Makai Wingo is getting into that backfield when he was healthy, wreaking havoc. Quick off the ball. He's got it with today's game wants. He's got Mahogany. Christian Mahogany's got a chance. He came back from that injury. He's going to be 2 years removed. I like the back end better in the front. Outside of Arnold, I like the back end. And I would have taken Cooper DeJean, but I understand they want the pure corner take. Arnold, fine. I'm not going to hit him for that. Okay. I like Arnold. Rakestraw to me, that's your guy. And like I said, Manu, And like I said, we'll see how it goes. But I like the late round picks. But I want to see Vaki at running back, not safety.
Hey, when Manu starts pancaking people left and right, I'm going to make you buy a jersey for me as a gift for telling you I told you so. All right, let's get to the NFC East here, Mel. And two teams got high marks, the Eagles and the Commanders. The Eagles get an A. Tell us what you love most about this draft.
I mean, what's not to like? I got my guy Cooper DeJean in the 2nd round after getting you Quinyon Mitchell. So you look at that draft field of the Philadelphia Eagles and say, where did they go wrong? What did they do that wasn't something that you had to really love? I think when at the start of that draft, when you look at what they were able to do, a guy fell in there a lot. There's no way they could have sat there at 22 and said, Quinyon Mitchell, Cooper DeJean, Wiggins, and all these guys are going to be there. They thought they were going to have to trade up. They didn't. So they get Mitchell. They make the deal to get Cooper DeJean, which was great. Jalen Hunt, to learn from the guys that are there and develop. He's not ready. He's coming out of Houston Christian. He didn't even dominate there, but he flashed, okay? And he tested great. And it's a phenomenal story. Anaya Smith, a kick returner with a rule change and a punt returner, that's where his role is going to be. And Jeremiah Trotter Jr., I thought when you look at what he could be in the NFL back in the 90s would have been really good. Now people say, well, I don't know. He's only 228 pounds. I look at the Notre Dame game where he was all over the field making plays and a lot of other games. He can get it done. There wasn't much separating him and Cecil Gray. So I look at the Eagles draft and even late with Johnny Wilson. It worked out beautifully, Field. We couldn't have scripted this daggone thing any better. We brought up Harold Carmichael, who I remember because I'm old. I remember Carmichael because I'm the old guy, right, Field? Harold Carmichael was like a 6'7 receiver back in the day. Nobody else that's listening to this knows who the heck. Go to YouTube. Go to any. Find Harold Carmichael, and then Johnny Wilson could be that guy. And they get Johnny Wilson in the 6th round. How did Johnny Wilson slip through the cracks that far as a unique talent at wide receiver? That blows my mind.
Yeah, I'm still concerned about the explosiveness for Johnny Wilson. I thought he'd be more like, you know, late round 4, maybe early round 5 at best, but still, in the 6th round, Mel, a totally reasonable gamble. All right, the Commanders, a team that I thought deserved high marks, you agreed. You know why? this team became so much more athletic over the weekend. Obviously, Jaden Daniels, the most athletic quarterback in the entire draft. But look at what they added on the defensive side of the ball as well, Mel. Johnny Newton, Mikey Sanristil. You go further down the list, you have Jordan McGee also there in the fifth round, who can fly around even if an undersized linebacker. Dominique Hampton, who could fly as well for the Washington Huskies. Maybe he'd be a sub-package linebacker as well. Plus all the offensive skill guys. Your guy Ben Sinnott and my guy Luke McCaffrey. This deserved an A, Mel.
Well, it's an A-minus field. It's an A-minus because they didn't draft enough offensive linemen to help out their quarterback, Jaden Daniels. Brandon Coleman's a guard. Who's playing tackle? How the tackle position is going to look on this football team? That's what I worry about. Jaden better be running around because that's his forte, right? He's going to have to and also protect that body. I look at this team and I say, okay, you got the defensive help there. That's fine. But like I said, the O-line is an issue for me. And I look at all their draft choices. Luke McCaffrey, where they took him, right? Luke McCaffrey, Adam Peters had Christian. So he goes to Luke. Luke is a guy who is a great story, the family of athletes, the dad, Ed McCaffrey, all that with Christian. So Luke McCaffrey had a good year. Contested catches. He's developing. I don't have a problem with that. I just want to say offensive line should have been more of a point of emphasis as it was. Brandon Coleman's going to be a guard, not a tackle. I like some of the players they took. They didn't force anything. The only reason they didn't get in the field is because, like I said, I would have liked to see at least one more offensive lineman drafted.
All right, we're coming back in just a moment to dive into a pair of more divisions. We'll start with the NFC South and the NFC West as First Draft rolls along in just a moment. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza, better because it has to be.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
All right, we're back here on First Draft. Mel Kiper Jr. That's Professor Kiper Jr. today. I am Field Yates. We're handing out draft grades from Mel. Let's go to the NFC South, Mel. We'll take a quick look at the full division. And nobody got above a B, a harsh grade, or at least in this division from you. But the Panthers and the Falcons were the two teams that I want to discuss. The Saints and the Bucs both got Bs as well. All right, so Mel, there are a lot of different ways to evaluate or give out draft grades. I think the most straightforward one is probably which teams drafted players higher than you expected them to go and which teams got players lower than you expected them to go. I will say this, though, for Carolina, Mel. You gave them a B-minus, and I understand without a premium first-round pick, they ended up trading back to number 32. But without a premium first-round pick, it was going to be hard for them to add an instant impact player. I will just say this for the Carolina Panthers front office, and I want to see what you have to say. This team has spent so much time this offseason making the pieces around Bryce Young better. At least Carolina has a credible chance to evaluate him this year, because last year, I don't care who was playing quarterback for the Carolina Panthers, it would have been a near disaster, maybe except for somebody like Patrick Mahomes. So what'd you like, or maybe not so much like, about that Panthers draft?
Well, yeah, you have no offensive lineman. I think, you know, look at the receiving entities they were able to get. Xavier Leggett, nice pick where they took him. He's not A.J. Brown. I know the comp's A.J. Brown. He's not A.J. Brown. I wouldn't know why a one-year wonder had that kind of ability, and he had one great year with Spencer Rattler. So the A.J. Brown comparisons, I think, are a little exaggerated. Jonathan Brooks is coming off an ACL November 11th. How much of an impact will he have? If he gets back to full strength for 2025, I think he'll be a really good player. I get that. So I'd like some of the Jatavion Sanders, to me, never showed for his skill set. And that's why I put Ben Sinnott ahead of him. I kept waiting. And go back to the tape. Jatavion Sanders never really was the elite guy you thought he could be. Maybe another year would have helped him. But I think there's a lot of potential there with some of these draft choices. Leggett is kind of that guy you want to see. Was the 1 year a reflection of what he's going to be? Or was the 1 year maybe making him a little overrated because he hadn't got it done to that level until that point? So I think there's some key guys, some wild cards that will determine the fate of whether Carolina Panthers had a great draft or just an average draft.
Okay, we have to move to the Falcons now, Mel, because no team has been discussed more over the past 3 days, and no pick has been discussed more than Michael Penix Jr. going eighth overall. Mel, I'm just going to hand the floor to you. You empty out all your thoughts on this pick by the Falcons.
A lot to unpack here, Field, so let's go back and forth. Michael Penix Jr. I thought was a major reach. 24 on the board, you take him at eight. Yep. With that said, Terry Fontenot, I love what Terry said. He said, we had strong conviction. He didn't have to agree with me or you, Field, or anybody else. I love the fact that he said we all loved Michael Penix Jr. because you're better to take him at eight. Okay, you have a 36-year-old quarterback in August coming up, and Kirk Cousins off an Achilles, right? So now it's a win-win you created. The most important position in all sports is quarterback. We keep saying that. Why are we critical then? Okay, you get Michael Penix Jr. My point is he's 24. He can't sit for 3 years. This is not Jordan Love. This is not Aaron Rodgers coming out who needed to change his delivery and be developed, right? He wasn't the same quarterback what we saw at the end of his career at Cal to what he was 3 years later. And they didn't even know what they had because they drafted Brian Brum in the second round the same year that he became the starting quarterback. They didn't even know what Aaron Rodgers would be. So this is not anything like that. Michael Penix Jr. is 24 and he's ready to go. And you're taking a guy ready to go and you're saying, no, you got to sit for 3 years? That's a bunch of hogwash. There's no way in hell he's sitting for 3 years, Field. If that's the case, you shouldn't have drafted. The only way it's a win-win, though, the only win-win here is if Kirk Cousins gets the job done and he takes him to a Super Bowl because he's been a plateau quarterback who gets you to the playoffs and he's 1-3 in the playoffs. He lost to Daniel Jones a couple years ago at home, by the way, right? So he's basically a 500 regular season quarterback with 6-7 games over 500 at the end of the day. So if Kirk Cousins coming off the injury isn't the same at age 36 that he was, you turn the page and you go to Michael Penix Jr. Then what does Michael Penix Jr. become? The win-win here is if Kirk Cousins develops big time. I mean, takes you to a Super Bowl, has a big time year. He shakes off the Achilles and he has a Super Bowl year. And then Michael Penix Jr. takes over in a couple years, 3 years down the road, and he develops into a great quarter. That's grand slam. So we have to see, Kirk, is he still a plateau? And what does Michael Penix Jr. develop into? Right. So they put themselves in a position where it could be a win-win field. My thing is, they got Rook, they got Trice, and they got the other pass rusher, Dortless.
Yep.
Somebody's got to make up for not getting Byron Murphy the second and also not getting Dallas Turner.
Okay.
So that's the end of the day. Those guys are pivotal on the defensive side.
So, Mel, I'll say this. Just to go back to the Michael Penix Jr. pick here for a second. What you just laid out is like, hey, if they win a Super Bowl with Kirk Cousins and then become great with Michael Penix Jr., it feels to me like Atlanta is almost justifying the pick with, like, outlier results as opposed to process, right? Like, the process is what I keep coming back to. You mentioned how you agreed and you appreciated that Terry Fontenot had conviction. I like conviction as well. But they had $100 million worth of conviction on Kirk Cousins a month and a half ago, right? Like, to me, I felt like the minute they signed Kirk Cousins, it was, we're out of the quarterback business. And we need to be for the next 2 years at minimum. If they draft a quarterback in 2 years, that's fine, because at that point of Kirk Cousins' deal, he'll have just $10 million in guaranteed money left over, which for a quarterback is basically nothing. But I just find it so unlikely to justify over the next two seasons having Michael Penix sitting on the bench with Kirk Cousins making $50 million in cash over each of the next 2 years. Or maybe it's 45, but still, it's a whole lot, Mel. And you could have had any of these defensive players. Mel, I would have taken Roma Dunze before I took Michael Penix Jr. for the Atlanta Falcons. I don't care if they have Drake London and Kyle Pitts and there's only one football to go around. I would have taken Roma and just said, at least this guy can play when Kirk Cousins is playing as well.
Hey, I'm with you, Field. I'm with you 100%. What I'm saying for them is they're saying we won't be picking eight anytime soon with Kirk Cousins as quarterback.
Yeah.
Kirk Cousins is 36 years of age. He needs somebody to be the heir apparent. Now we got the heir apparent. So that's why I can see why he did it. I don't agree with it, but I can understand the rationale behind it.
All right, Mel, let's move to the NFC West. We can talk about that one until the cows come home. We will throughout the day here on ESPN. The Cardinals get an A draft, Mel. And I know that it has so much more to do with my two guys, Isaiah Adams and Tip Riman, going in the third round than anything else, right?
Yeah, that's the reason why it's not an A-plus field right there. I think when you look at Marvin Harrison Jr., Darius Robinson, Max Melton, Trey Benson, Elijah Jones, Taylor Demerson, you know, Christian Jones, where they got him, my guy Tajon Palmer, who I highlighted on this first draft podcast during the course of the year, I think they did a heck of a job. There's no doubt about it. Max Melton and Elijah Jones with Taylor Demerson are really going to help that secondary. Darius Robinson gives him a versatile guy on the D-line field. And then Benson with that 4.39 speed catching the football out of backfield as well. And Marvin Harrison Jr. becoming the guy who Larry Fitzgerald was. And I think that's the whole thing right there. If your Isaiah Adams pick at three turns out to be a heck of a player, and you're right, Ryman becomes the blocker he's capable of being, then this is an A-plus draft all the way around. They got a lot of players. A lot of picks we knew they had, right? Do they make the picks count? That's the whole key to this whole thing. I think they did. I think they have a great draft, and this could propel them to some really good things in the next few years.
Mel, I absolutely love the draft. In terms of volume, that helps. But there's star power there, right? Keeping it simple at number four, just taking Marvin Harrison Jr., this potentially transcendent talent, and resisting the opportunity to move back and add extra picks. You got a million picks already, including number 27 overall. And truly, the Cardinals basically took the first draft podcast, right? I mean, all the guys that you and I have been talking about endlessly over the past 3 months, some of our favorite players, seemingly all of them ended up in Arizona. I want to go to Los Angeles, Mel. They got a B-plus from you, the Rams did. And I agree with that grade. And I'll say this, Mel. I've come to appreciate so much how the Rams go about their process, right? There are many teams, I understand why, that will have basically standards, right? If you don't meet these minimums, you're not going to be on a draft board. It feels to me like the Rams say, go find good football players, right? You're a little older, fine. We don't care. We'll take you. A little too short, a little too slow, doesn't matter. We'll take you. The Rams take Jared Verse, Braden Fisk, Blake Corum, Cam Kitchens. Guys with their first four picks all in the three rounds, Mel, that might have been, you know, like I said, too old, too short, too slow. Case of Cam Kitchens, 4.65. They got good football players though, right, Mel?
They did field, but they're all players that have something you can critique. Jared Verse, the tightness in the hips. Braden Fisk, the short arms. Cam Kitchens, a 4.65 40. I love Brennan Jackson, though. When you watch Jared Verse, obviously the power, the burst, the ability to show that great hustle and never take a down off. He's going to be a key guy. Is the tightness in the hips going to prevent him from being a 10-plus sack a year guy? I really think Brennan Jackson's a steal in the fifth round. I don't know how he got down that far. I thought he should have been a third-round pick. I think that's one of their best picks overall. Josh Riccardi was my top kicker. They get him late as well. So overall, they got some really good football players. But to be great in the NFL, some of these guys are going to have to overcome Braden Fisk, the short arms, like I say, versus the tightness in the hips. So, and again, Cam Kitchens instinctive, but not super fast. He had the hiccup against Georgia Tech that everybody killed him on. I didn't. I like their draft. I gave him a B+, but these guys have to overcome some of the things I just discussed to become the kind of players in the NFL that they showed they could be in college.
I just appreciate the process of the Rams. They seem like a team that is not beholden to consensus rankings or how mock drafts might value a certain player. And by the way, last thing I loved, they had to address that front seven, Mel. Aaron Donald retires. They're already short on edge rushers. They did that continuously throughout this NFL draft. All right, coming up here, we are diving into the AFC, specifically the AFC East and the AFC West. Some new-look teams in both of those divisions, plus some help is on the way from Patrick Mahomes. Not that guy actually needed it. All right, Mel and Field on the other side of the break in just a moment. All right, back here on First Draft. He's Mel Kiper Jr. I am Field Yates, Professor Kiper today, handing out the grades. Mel, let's start in the AFC East, and the Patriots kept it simple at the very top of the draft here, Mel. All four teams got a B, but the Patriots made probably the most notable selection amongst these four teams as they took Drake May with number 3 overall. And then, Mel, if you look at the rest of the Patriots draft, there is a very notable theme. Offense, offense, and more offense. Jalen Polk, Caden Wallace, Laydon Robinson, Javon Baker. The first five picks all on the offensive side of the ball. They finally hit the defensive side of the ball on day 3 with Marcellus Dial, another player mentioned recently on First Draft here, with Jaheim Bell late in the rounds as well. What'd you make of this first draft under Elliott Wolf and the first time the Patriots had somebody besides Bill Belichick running the room in 25 years?
This is your draft field. This is a field Jake's draft.
Really,
I'm going to turn it over to you, pal. These are all your guys. They must have been watching First Draft podcast because they drafted everybody field Yates loved all year. I mean, I was amazed when I looked at this when I was coming back on my 9-hour drive from Detroit to the Kent Island here, field. I'm looking here, I see field Yates loved them. Field Yates. Were you in their war room? They were watching the First Draft podcast. Something's going on here, field. This is all you, pal. Take it away.
Yeah, so Mel, I mean, everybody who watches First Draft knows that Jalen Polk was my guy throughout the process. I had him at 42, Mel, which might have been higher than some had him. So him going at 37 was not as much of a surprise in my eyes as anybody else. And I just thought the process here, Mel, again, we can worry about consensus ranks and things like that. The process here was fundamentally sound, right? Because you talked about this. The Patriots had Mac Jones, who, as a rookie, looked like maybe he was the best in class from a 5 quarterback in the first 15 picks class of 2021. And then things deteriorated really quickly, right? And part of it was the Patriots not having the resources around Mac Jones to help him become a better player. It feels like the Patriots have said, we're taking Drake May, and while we had a quiet free agency, Mel, we're going hunting in the draft to help make sure that Drake May is immediately surrounded with better players. So I was all in on Jalen Polk. Caden Wallace, a guy that I know our colleague Lewis Riddick absolutely loved as well. And then in the seventh round, Mel, like even a guy like Jaheim Bell, right? One of the more versatile players in the entire NFL draft. To me, just sort of sound fundamental process here from the New England Patriots. And I love myself some Jalen Polk. Whoever got him, Mel, was getting an A in my book. That's how, and I'll be the grader one day, maybe at ESPN, when you retire in 14 years. But until that time, I'll let you handle these duties going forward here, Mel. But the Patriots, just helping out the quarterback, that certainly is a key. Let's go to the Dolphins here, Mel, who had a first-round pick for, it feels like a while, it feels like it's been a while since the Dolphins had a first-round pick. They've been, of course, maybe because of all the trades they made, like Tyreek Hill and Bradley Chubb, etc. Let's take a look at their draft. Chop Robinson, Patrick Paul, Jalen Wright, Muhammad Kamara, Malik Washington, Mel. Your thoughts. I feel like you would probably argue that this draft got better as it went along for Miami after a couple of players early that maybe you weren't quite as high on.
Exactly. Chop Robinson to me is a roll of the dice. He has a situation where you got a great workout, but you didn't have the production. If you can be that good and that athletic and that physically gifted, why in the world didn't you just dominate? Why didn't you have a ton of sacks? Why did you have just 2 against UMass and not much against anybody else? I don't get it. Patrick Paul needs some work. He gets sloppy with his technique. Jalen Wright's a fast running back. You know they like fast guys, McMillan and company. That's what they go by. I think their best pick was Muhammad Kamara. I think he might have been the best pick in this draft field. I think he may be a better player ultimately than Chop Robinson coming off the edge. You can believe that. A fifth-round pick better than a guy who went in the first round at 21. That was a 158. Better than the guy who went early. I think he could be. And I like some of the other things they did late. I think when you look at where we are with Malik Washington, slot receiver, productive at 2 different schools. I love that. At Virginia, he showed he could be that slot guy. It's tough to deal with. So Jalen Wright, Malik Washington is going to help their offense. Patrick Paul needs to be developed. He needs to be coached. Chop Robinson determines everything. If Chop can become a sack guy, and I think Mo Camaro is going to be a really good situational pass rusher because, remember, Chubb and Phillips are coming off significant injuries. Then this Miami Dolphins team in the AFC East with Josh and Rodgers and Tua and the AFC in general, they did a good job overall if this happens to really come to light. If it comes to fruition where Chop becomes a big-time player, he's the whole draft for me. Everything revolves around Chop Robinson. And that's going to determine A or C. And then Mo Camara, if Mo Camara makes up for Chop or he's as good as what Chop is, then that's a home run, a grand slam. So this is going to be a really a fun draft to see how these guys develop. How are they coached? Patrick Paul, too, in the second round. So, and we know Jalen Wright. I love the kid. Give him a little crack, and the boy, he can go. He is going to be another fear factor player on that offense. And I think Malik Washington will be as well.
Yeah, Malik Washington. He's the slow guy in that Miami offense, by the way. He only runs a 4.47. I kid, of course. He is a very fast man, but when you have
Tyreek Hill. Yeah, 42 and a half vertical, too,
yeah,
Phil.
That's right. Yeah, but when you have Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle, everybody else feels slow in comparison. All right, let's rip over to the AFC West here, Mel. And interesting draft grades here. 2 B pluses. That would be the Chargers and the Chiefs. The Raiders get a B. Meanwhile, the Broncos get a C plus. We can dive into, at least I would like to dive into the Chiefs to start here, Mel. And Xavier Worthy ends up going 28th overall to the Chiefs. You and I talked about him ad nauseum. My point of contention was that if you're 165 pounds, I need you to go somewhere where you're not going to ask to be, you're not going to be asked to be the number one receiving option right out of the chutes. I would say mission accomplished going to Kansas City. What'd you make of the Champs draft?
You know, I love what they did with Worthy. We've been raving about him. I know you were bashing him all through the process.
All throughout.
The 165 yep. pounds. You wanted to put on some weight. You wanted to start eating more and getting bigger and all that. But look at the ability here, the takeoff and the go get the football and the hand-eye coordination and the fact that he's tough. He's not just a guy who has great speed and doesn't love to play football and doesn't love to take hits. This kid does. I think he's a great pick. I was a little surprised at Buffalo didn't take him. Just take the guy and let Kansas City get him. But that's a good pick. Kingsley Suamataia is a developmental tackle that they will probably coach up to the point he'll be a Pro Bowler field. Everything Kansas City touches turns to gold, right? Well, that's coaching, pal. And that's Jared Wiley. We saw the 81-yard touchdown. He can stretch the deep middle. Did it against Baylor. He did it a lot during his career at TCU. Jaden Hicks, love his talent. Does he have to be more of a consistent tackler? Yes, he does. Dorsett could be an anchor on the offensive line. You have the Tennessee corner. If he can stay healthy, he can be a really good player. This team, overall, I gave him a B-plus grade. I mean, Hanson, even late, I think, could be a good backup in the NFL, maybe even a starter because they get so much out of the players they draft. Yeah. I like it overall. I didn't give it an A. Why? Because they're on the come. We don't know what Kingsley's going to be. We have to assume that all these guys will be great because they're Kansas City Chiefs. And they got Patrick Mahomes, who makes everybody look better, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But again, to get the players at the position, even Kingsley, to get him end of the second, I mean, I get it. He's raw, but the talent is in abundance. So, yes, I thought a pretty solid draft overall. Like I said, more than that, if Suamataia develops into a bookend, that's an A draft if that happens.
Yeah, Mel, you mentioned both of these players already, but I thought both Jaden Hicks and Jared Wiley were excellent values in the fourth round. Hicks was 67 overall on the big board, Mel. I mean, all the versatility he brings to the table, that, to me, enough justifies his being picked in the fourth round. That was a great, great value there by KC. And Jared Wiley is the understudy to Travis Kelce. Are you kidding me? With that athletic ability and size, he's going to be a player for KC. I feel like we haven't talked that much over the past few days about what the Raiders did specifically in the first round, Mel. I don't know if I had any time where I was mocking Brock Bowers to the Raiders at number 13 overall. I didn't see many mocks that connected that player to that team. But here's where I land on it, Mel. I've seen people say, well, it wasn't a need. They have Michael Mayer, their second-round pick last year. It felt, though, to me, Mel, like there was a disconnect because all throughout the draft process, we kept talking about how I don't care if you got good wide receivers. Brock Bowers is a tight end. Hey, I don't care if you got a tight end. This guy can be a wide receiver. He's an offensive weapon, an offensive entity, as you like to call him, as well. What'd you make of the Raiders' decision to go with Bowers at 13 overall?
I love Brock Bowers, Field. You know that. I was a little surprised that they didn't take Dallas Turner. Dallas Turner slipped through the cracks. Dallas Turner's grade was right there for Brock Bowers. I had Brock Bowers at 7, Dallas Turner at 9, but they had the same grade. On the big board, I gave Brock a slight edge. I'm with you. I thought that they could have gone pass rusher there. They have Mayer, who showed promise. Brock Bowers not getting a Dallas Turner. They really didn't get anybody off the edge the rest of that draft that could do what he can do. You could have found guys down the line that could do some things and help out Michael Mayer. So while I love Brock, I gave him a B because I think, okay, you know, would Turner have been more of an impactful player right away on the defensive side than some of the guys they got? I mean, you think about Tommy Eichenberg. Tommy Eichenberg's built for the 1985-1990 as he built for today's NFL. Okay, that's the bottom line there. I'm not a DeCamerie and Richardson a fan. I don't rave about him. I was shocked at his workout. Yeah. But did he play like that?
I didn't see it
on tape, Field.
Nope.
So I didn't get that aspect. Trey Taylor I like, but I know he's kind of a guy at Air Force. You saw him. Hey, if you watch the First Draft podcast, Tajon Palmer, Trey Taylor, a lot of others we talked about during this podcast. There's a reason why we do this thing, Field.
No doubt.
But I think you have to look at it overall. Jackson Powers Johnson could be a good anchor of that offensive line. They need help there. But yeah, like I said, I would have probably, despite my love for Brock Bowers, I probably would have taken Dallas Turner.
I would have taken Brock Bowers. I feel like between Max Crosby, who, of course, is maybe one of the five best defensive players maybe even one of the five best players in the NFL, regardless of position. And last year's first-round pick, Tyree Wilson, they'd had enough of an investment at those pass rushers to bypass someone like Dallas Turner. I would have considered Talifuonga, but I'm more of a Delmar Glaze guy than I think most are, Mel. I actually thought that was a fine, justifiable pick in round three. But we cannot forget my guy, Dylan Laube, going at pick 208 overall out of the University of New Hampshire, late in the sixth round, Mel. Of course, remember, Tom Telesco, the new Raiders GM, signed Danny Woodhead after his great career with the Patriots to go to the San Diego Chargers. How valuable was that guy? Think about Danny Woodhead playing a comparable role here for the Las Vegas Raiders. All right, we have
Let me say one thing, Phil.
Go ahead, Mel. Yeah.
Let me say, real quick. You just said, Dallas Turner, you never have enough pass rushers. And can you imagine Turner and Wilson and Max Crosby trying to deal with that group coming after you?
Well, I wouldn't think
you know we're in the AFC. Right. Do you know, Okay. Well, either way, can you imagine in the AFC, when you got, you got to finish and close on these quarterbacks, or you got to cover on the back end if you don't. Yeah. Somehow, some way, the AFC is loaded with great quarterbacks. If I got that group of pass rushers and I'm at them all on the field and you got guys coming from all areas, some will drop back into cover, some will attack. I would rather have that than go the other directions that we talked about. So that's why I thought Turner would have made sense. I know you have Wilson, but you never have enough guys there. And I just look at that AFC field with those quarterbacks and say, boy, how do you stop them? You stop them either with great pass rush or you stop them with covering on the back end. You're not going to get both, but you had a chance to get that great pass rush, and they chose not to.
All right, we have one more set of divisions to review, the AFC South and the AFC North. That comes up on the other side of this break here on First Draft. All right, we're back to wrap up Mel Kiper Jr.'s draft grades. 32 teams, 32 grades. Let's go to the AFC South, where we had a range from the B-plus to the C-plus. The B-plus was the Texans. The C-plus was the Titans. Mel, I actually think people would be surprised that the Texans, without a first-round pick, would land the highest grade in the division. What did you like the most about what Houston did?
Well, I liked a lot of their I like the players they drafted, Phil. Yep. Kamari Lassiter, I had talked a lot about on this podcast. He's in the hip pocket of those receivers. He plays a physical brand of football. Yes, he didn't run 4.45. Who the hell cares? These 40 times drives me crazy, Phil. A 4.5 is a bad 40 time now. It's how do you play? You can play. You can run a 4.5 and still play faster. You can run 4.4 and play like a 4.6 guy. Blake Fisher, had he been back at Notre Dame for another year, would have been a guy we were raving about. Kalen Bullock, I know Matt Miller, I know you talked about him a lot. I'm not as high on him, but in the third round, that's not bad. I love Cade Stover, former linebacker, defensive player at 265 pounds, ran a 4.65, caught the ball, blocked. He's kind of a throwback type of player that Texan fans are going to love. And guess what? C.J. Stroud's reunited with Cade Stover. I love that they did that. They didn't forget about one of C.J. Stroud's key guys in Cade Stover. Then, you know, later in the draft, I thought Jawar Jordan could be this year's Keaton Mitchell. I didn't think he'd run a 4.56. I thought he might run a 4.4. He didn't, but he played fast at Louisville. He was a home run hitting back who could catch the ball out of the backfield. Then you get a Marcus Harris late. At one point in time, we were talking about Marcus Harris, maybe third or fourth round. So I just thought they got some good football players, but I thought some of those guys early were a little underrated, Kamari Lassiter being one of those, and I really think that Cade Stover is going to be a key guy for C.J. Stroud. So both sides of the ball, they got help for a team that is ready to roll maybe into the Super Bowl. Who knows? So again, like I said, I thought a solid draft for the Houston Texans.
Back to the process here, Mel. I just loved how aggressive the 2024 NFL draft was for the Houston Texans. Obviously, shipping the first-round pick last year during the 2023 NFL draft proved to be a masterstroke with C.J. Stroud and also Will Anderson. But Nick Caserio is constantly wheeling and dealing, targeting players for a roster that might be, I don't know, the third or fourth best in the entire AFC, especially with the expected growth of C.J. Stroud going into his second season. Let's talk about the Titans, though, Mel, because they had just two picks in the first three rounds. They took J.C. Latham seventh overall. Mm-hmm. They got a C-plus, though, and they had no third-round pick. Let's look at some of the players they took. T'Vondre Sweat goes 38th overall. Cedric Gray in the fourth round, Jarvis Brownlee in the fifth round, Jaquan Jackson in the sixth round, James Williams is a late seventh round flyer. I really like rounds four through six, Mel. It's rounds two and three. Obviously, they had no pick in round three. They kind of had me hung up as well. You and I saw T'Vondre Sweat a little bit different during the pre-draft process, but did you still think that 38 was a little bit rich for Tavondre Sweat?
Yeah, I did. You know, you had the off-the-field thing. You know, you look at Tavondre Sweat. I like the kid. I'd like them a lot better, more than anybody did. We had debated that. I thought he was a guy who was productive. I thought he was more disruptive than anybody gave him credit for. Byron Murphy II didn't outproduce him by much in terms of even sack production. He had 5. Sweat had with 2.5. Sweat was in that, was getting the job done. Why couldn't you run against Texas? It was because of that wall that was Tavondre Sweat. He is huge. I understand the draft process didn't treat him tremendously well. But you go back to the tape, people say, well, he's built for 1980. He's another one of those guys. I talk about Tommy Eichenberg, built for the 80s. You know, we don't need the stay-at-home type defensive tackles anymore. Last time I checked, they still do run the football. And Tavondre Sweat did give you some ability to get into the backfield. So when you look at it and you size it all up, I thought at the end of the day he'd be a third-round pick like Gilbert Brown, who was my comp to him when he came out of Kansas a while ago, right? Had a good career. Tavondre Sweat was a little early for everybody, I think. For me, though, I like the player. I like what he can become if he stays focused on the attention to detail, stays focused on the job at hand. I think he can be a guy who can help this football team. J.C. Latham, well, can he be a left tackle? We don't know that. He believes he can. Alabama never moved him. I love him as a right tackle. Can he be a left tackle? Of their late-round picks, Jarvis Brownlee's okay. Down the field, he's got to locate the ball. Yep. That's what bothered me a little bit with him. I said it when he was drafted. So some of these guys, they're okay. James Williams is a tweener. What is he? Is he a safety? Is he a linebacker? That's why I gave them a grade that I did, not as high as some of the other teams in the league this year, and the division even. But I think Sweat, to me, is really a key guy because I think overall field, their draft, brought in some guys that can help them. And Latham, can he be a left tackle? Wasn't loving a lot of it. I thought it was a decent draft, not a really good one, but we'll see how it plays out.
Yeah, we'll see on Tavondre Sweat. He, to me, will define how this draft looks. A few years from right now, I was not as high as you were on him. I thought 38 was a reach. Let's go to the AFC North to wrap things up here. Mel, and one of your favorite drafts in the entire process was the Pittsburgh Steelers, who got an A- in the entirety of the division. We had the Ravens at a B+. We had the Bengals at a B, and we had the Browns at a C+. Remember, the Browns short on draft capital. They had no first-round pick as part of the Deshaun Watson trade. So talk us through the Steelers, who ended up with an A. Excuse me. What did you like about the Steelers draft most?
Well, they got an A-minus field. They got an A-minus because they're the Pittsburgh Steelers. A-minus because they're the Pittsburgh Steelers. That's it. They really got an A, but they got an A-minus because they're the Steelers. I love the way they attacked the interior of their offensive line. Love the way they went for the value picks that presented an opportunity to steal guys like Troy Fa'utanu, where they did. They didn't take Graham Barton. Graham Barton didn't have as high a grade even on my board as Troy Fa'utanu did. Zach Frazier is a center and anchor with that wrestling background. Mason McCormick, so he could be a center guard, but guess what? He gets after. He's smart and he's tough, and that's what offensive line coaches want. Everything O-line coaches want field, they got with Mason McCormick, Zach Frazier, and Troy Fa'utanu. A little disappointed here in Raven country and Crab Cake country that they got so many good players on the offensive line to help out Russell Wilson or Justin Fields. Peyton Wilson, if he can stay healthy, can fly to the football, and Roman Wilson's a good slot receiver. Ryan Watts will help him on special teams as a versatile defensive back. I'm a little disappointed their draft was so great because I'm Ravens all the way field. They did deserve an A. A-minus was just to have a little fun with that and say, hey, you're the Steelers. Heck with that, I'm not giving you an A. But really, I got to congratulate Mike Tomlin and that front office because it lined up. It just fell perfectly that Troy Fa'utanu was there when they picked. They didn't forget about it. They said, we're going to go back to the offensive line with Frazier and McCormick. To me, great, great strategy. Bodes well for Wilson and Fields. And I really think Fields is going to be the guy. But they attacked it well. It fell right perfectly for them, and they deserved the high grade.
Okay, so Mel puts his purple aside here for a second, gives him an A, even if it's an A- on ESPN.com. By the way, the Ravens took all your guys, Mel. All right, I mean, Roger Rosengarten. I mean, he goes, Nate Wiggins, a guy you talked about at some points during the process. The Ravens following the Kuiper board. Let's talk about the Bengals, though, Mel, because I thought they were one of the most intriguing risk-reward teams in the entire NFL draft. 18th overall, they took Amarius Mims, who, if he had a full year of development and seasoning back at Georgia for 2024, might have been a top 5 pick next year. That's how much raw talent he has. But also in the third round, Jermaine Burton, wide receiver from Alabama. Eric All has got a back issue in the fourth round, out of Iowa. Then they double up on tight ends late in the draft by taking our guy, Tanner McLaughlin, in the 6th round. To me, it feels like there is a lot of upside here, Mel, but some risk-reward involved as well.
There is all major college guys, Phil. That one guy that didn't play at a big-time program, if you really look across the board, they went after guys who were marquee names. Amarius Mims, Jenkins, Jermaine Burton was at Georgia, goes to Alabama, had a good year overall. I'm looking at this list. The guys I like, Tanner McLaughlin, we talked about, Phil. We both liked him through the process. He dropped down further than he should have. When you really look at this, Josh Newton 2 years ago was really good. This year he fell back a little bit. But they all have shown at some point in their career that star power. They showed that they were up here, right, in terms of where they could play. Then they dropped back just a bit, some of these guys. And Mims, had he played more than 8 games during his career and not had the ankle injury this year, might have been a top 10 pick. So you're rolling the dice on talent. People say, how does Chris Jenkins fit in? Chris Jenkins just makes plays. Now, more against the run, but he goes sideline to sideline. He locates the ball. If he can give him a little pass rush, it's an added bonus. So I thought the Bengals stayed to the big schools, stayed the guys that were key guys on their respective teams. Yes, they rolled the dice on Mims, but they have the veteran right tackle now, so they got some opportunities there to keep this thing rolling.
Yeah, Cincinnati almost always drafts from big schools, Mel. It is a part of their fabric. It has usually worked out pretty well for them, at least of late, as they have built themselves into one of the best contenders in the AFC. All right, we're going to come back in just a moment here and put a bow on this season of the first draft. Professor Kuiper out in full force. We'll be back in just one moment. All right, back here on First Draft, he's Mel Kuiper Jr., I am Field Yates, and Mel, I cannot thank you enough for what was a wonderful season of draft talk and coverage. You, my friend, are the absolute legend of all legends for the NFL draft.
Field, I'll tell you what, you were a rookie who played like a 10-year veteran. I got to congratulate you. I mean, you were amazing. And I was sitting next to Field Yates during a draft, and this man never looks down. He looks straight at his mind is, to me, you got the 4.0 average, you got a 5.0 average, okay? Because your intelligence, your intellect is off the charts, pal. I just say, hey, rookie of the year, Field Yates.
Aw, Mel, you are far too kind. First Draft will be back sooner than you know it, people. So make sure you keep that subscription wherever you get to your podcast. We'll talk to you again soon. For Mel, the legend, I'm Field. We'll see you soon.